Welcome to the More Than Fitness Podcast.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to a... I was about to go right into the minisode intro. This is not a minisode. This is a solo pod with your boy. And if you can't tell, the voice is a little bit raspier this morning because I had a little bit too much to drink last night. And I'm paying for it this morning, but that is okay because we are responsible adults that can enjoy some alcohol in moderation, sometimes more than moderation. However, we still get our shit done the next day, and I'm going to come on here and drop some knowledge for you guys today. Well, at least hopefully. The topic that I want to talk about today is something that I've talked about in the past, but and it's something that I continue to think more and more about just because I feel like I can get obsessed with efficiency and effectiveness. And I feel like who doesn't want to be doing the right things in the most efficient way possible, you know? And so the topic for today that I want to talk about is leverage points and just the concept of leverage in general. So leverage, just a quick little definition, is just like, it's a force multiplier of your effort, skills, and judgment, right? So a force multiplier of your effort, skills, and judgment. And I think that a very simplistic way of putting it is it's how to increase your input to output ratio, right? So a change in like 10% in one area can generate 100% improvement to your overall life. So it's like, how can we take these things that we do on a regular basis, either that we're already doing, or what can we learn whenever it comes to effort, skills, and judgment? So where can we maybe put in more effort or take away effort, right? Because sometimes you need to subtract things to make things a little bit easier on yourself. But then also skills, what new skills can we learn that can allow us to apply leverage in different areas? And then also judgment, so your decision-making skills, like what decisions can you say no to? What decisions can you say yes to? And what are the consequences that can come of that? And how can we choose better decisions that may eliminate making more decisions in the future, right? And so this is the idea of leverage and leverage points. So how can we make a change? How can we make a change in 10%? How can we just move the dial just a little bit in one area of our life that can give us big results in our entire life as a whole, right? And so what I'm going to do in this episode is just kind of go through a few things that I have written down here that would make sense for applying more leverage to our life, using this idea to not try too much harder, but to make better decisions and then increase the output and the results that we can potentially get from that. And so the very first one is kind of like a basic one. And again, it's just like, it's the boring one that everybody talks about. And I've written an article about this. I call it the most boring but effective fitness tip ever. And it's just about sleep, right? And so again, thinking of an area that we can make one little small adjustment here and then makes a big difference on our life. So with sleep, I think overall, like just figuring out how to get better sleep and whatever it is specifically with your sleep that you need to improve to allow yourself to get better sleep is going to be huge. But I think one of the easiest little changes that you can do, right, is going to be getting a comfier mattress. So investing in a more comfortable mattress. And I'm pretty sure that I know some people are in the mattress game, and I've seen them talk about it. And it actually gets pretty deep whenever you research into like what kind of sleeper you are, like the positions that you sleep in, the firmness that you like, the the feel of the mattress. There's a lot of different variables that I didn't even realize that go into choosing a mattress. So instead of just like, hey, picking one that's maybe on a deal or just, you know, maybe one that's just Tempur-Pedic or something, maybe look into it a little bit more, especially if you wake up and you're just constantly achy or something feels off or you're just not getting the best quality sleep and maybe you've had the same mattress for a very long time, right? Especially if you're somebody, you know, I'm 27, somebody in their later 20s, it's just like, if you still have the same mattress that you had whenever you first moved into like your dorm room in college or something like that, it's like, okay, maybe we should try and step it up and invest in a more solid mattress. But I think that choosing a comfier mattress is going to be one of those things that you can apply leverage that, of course, you guys know, there's not shit that I need to talk about how important sleep is. Everybody knows it. However, if it's something that you've just been continually putting off and then you're just continually waking up and feeling worse or just not feeling good in general, well, maybe there's some things that you need to take a look at. And oftentimes, I think a mattress is a very reasonable start. But then other than that, it's like, just to use an example, so I talked to my parents about this. My parents constantly get bad sleep and it's because of their damn dogs and actually the cat too. It's their animals, right? And I know so many of us, we love our animals, right? We love them to death. However, they can just ruin our sleep. And that's just something that you've got to have boundaries with these animals. And you've got to make sure that if they're consistently, you know, interrupting your sleep or making you wake up early, because what can happen is, so like an example is my dad, who runs an auto body business, and you know, he has stressors that come along with this, and he thinks about all of the things that he needs to do for that day and take care of whenever he possibly gets interrupted in the middle of the night. So the dogs will wake him up, you know, maybe like an hour and a half before he wakes up, and then it's just kind of off to the races. It's just his mind is off to the races and he's just thinking about the next thing that he needs to do. And he says, finally, I just get up because I'm just laying there and not going back to sleep. But it's just like that can happen over and over and over again. And so I'm just like, hey, like, I get it. You guys love the dogs. Maybe you want them to sleep in the bed or they just do that. They're just used to that. But it's like you have to kick them out. Like you have to put them on the floor. You have to make sure they know their role. And I think that honestly, this is worth, because of course it's like, if it's something that you've been doing for a long time, you're just like, oh, they always sleep in the bed. It's like, cool. However, it's like, this is having a pretty negative impact on your health, on your mood. And of course, then it ripples into other things as well. You guys know how it is. Whenever you get a bad night's sleep, you wake up and that affects your entire day, you know? And if you have so many of those consecutively throughout the week, throughout the month, throughout the years, that can be a problem. So I think starting with whatever it seems that constantly keeps you up or is interrupting your sleep, or maybe you need to get, maybe you need to get darker curtains, or maybe you need to get an eye mask. Maybe you need to get earplugs. I sleep with an eye mask and an earplug and just one earplug. No, I sleep with earplugs and I sleep with an eye mask. And this allows me to that no matter what the environment is, whether I'm at the beach, I'm traveling at a hotel, I'm at a friend's house, I'm at my place, it doesn't matter what it is, I can always create this constant environment where I facilitate the environment and it doesn't matter what is going on around me. Like if I'm by a busy intersection, right? Or if I'm, that I'm staying with have kids or something like that, they're waking up early. Or if my parents wake up early and the dogs also wake up early, it's like, I'm not going to hear them because I have my earplugs, I have my eye mask. That's going to be a good idea. Spend some more time figuring out your sleep. That's going to be the first leverage point. All right. The next leverage point that I want to go into is, and I've got a mix between just like life things. And then I've also got some fitness ones in here too. So bear with me here in case some of these aren't ones that you're interested in. But I think the second one that I really like as far as leverage goes is just money management. And not obviously, you know, hey, I'm not an expert. I'm not trying to claim that I'm an expert. I'm not trying to say I'm balling over here or anything like that. But with money management, it's just like, it was one of the things that I wasn't well versed in. So I was just like, okay, I want to figure out most of the fundamentals with this. And from most of the things that I see, it's just like automating your, it's just like automating your finances and just trying to save out of every single paycheck and just using that, putting that through some type of automation and not having you do it manually, that's going to be huge. I think that's just one thing that is super easy to set up the first time. Just whenever you get a paycheck, certain amount goes to a certain savings account or whatever it is, but just making sure that without you having to do anything and let your emotions get involved, it's probably a good idea to figure out how to automate your savings with money. And it's definitely not everything. However, you know, money solves money problems. And it's just like that for a lot of people, having more money is going to solve a lot of their problems. But I think what can happen is, especially if you get the paycheck and then you just feel, you know, a more secure or more sense of security, right? Because you get the money in your account, you're like, okay, good, I'm good to go. And so maybe you spend it more freely. It's kind of like, I'm trying to think of one example would be like pre-workout or some type of powder or something. That's what first came to my mind. It's like whenever you first get pre-workout, you know, you're scooping that thing. Like you don't even care if it's level or anything like that. You know, you're scooping it, you're throwing it in there. It's not just one scoop. It's usually like, you know, 1 1/4 scoops. You're being very generous with the amount of things that you, or with the amount of powder that you're using. Right. Or maybe if it's condiments or something, right? Like if you have ketchup and you're, where am I going with this? You have ketchup and then you're in the very beginning, when you first have the ketchup, you know, you're just throwing it on whatever. You're not thinking about how much it is. And you're putting it on everything. And then going back to the pre-workout example, whenever your pre-workout is down to the last little bit and you're sitting there scraping the bottom of the pre-workout can, and you're like, damn, I really wish I would have rationed things out a little bit better in the beginning of this instead of being super liberal with the amount of powder that I'm using, or with the ketchup. Whenever you get to the very end of the ketchup, like, damn, I wish I didn't like waste so much in the beginning. This is how ketchup and pre-workout relate to money management. There we go. I brought it back around. Maybe not the best examples, but you guys understand exactly what I'm saying. It's just like whenever you have the money in your account, you're like, oh, good, I could spend it more freely. But if you know, hey, as soon as I get this paycheck, this percentage is going to be going to this savings account, and then the rest, you know, you can do with it as you wish. That's just going to save you a lot of time and headaches and energy, and especially later on. So your future self will thank you. I think that money management, specifically around automation, is going to be, and then of course, automating it, putting it into a savings account or investing that back into the market or something like that. That's also going to be a leverage point within a leverage point, kind of, whenever you have compound interest, things like that. You can have your money work for you without doing anything. So I think that even just learning about that is going to be something that you can, you know, you don't have to spend tons of time to figure it out, because like I said, after you read, it's just like with diet and exercises, after you read a certain amount of books or resources and things, you can find the patterns over time. Like, okay, people have different philosophies or ideas around these certain things, but most people are saying these specific things. This is the common pattern throughout all of these. And usually it's going to be whatever, save more than you spend, and then figuring out some type of savings plan, investment plan. And yeah, that'll save you a lot of headaches in the long run. And don't rely on your human emotion to be rational and to save on your own. Automate that shit. Okay, next one. Next one is going to be a nutrition one. And this one is counting calories. to be honest. Like, so just basic nutrition knowledge. So counting calories, probably learning how to read nutrition labels. This is going to be something that, you know, in the grand scheme of your life, if you track your food for, let's say, 6 months, very aggressively, you're very articulate with it. You spend a lot of time. Yes, it's going to be tedious, but if you can spend 6 to 12 months counting everything that you put in your mouth, figuring out the calories, figuring out the macros, understanding nutrition labels, that knowledge in that specific, you know, 6 to 12 months, you can take that knowledge that you learn and you're going to be able to use that for the rest of your life. So being able to understand these basic nutrition things and then how your body can respond to these certain things, it's like that's how you can stay healthy for your entire life without too much stress, to be honest. Of course, what I'm saying is you're not going to be tracking for your entire life, but just so, like for me, I used to do bodybuilding. I used to track my calories all the time. I spent years tracking, and I haven't tracked in a very long time. However, even during whenever you consider your entire life, those couple years, it's going to be still a small period of time. But that has still allowed me to this day to be able to look at certain portions on my plate or certain foods and things and be like, oh, okay, I know that that's going to be a little bit higher in fat. I know that this is going to be a little bit lower in fat. I know this is going to be higher protein, et cetera, right? Like knowing these certain things in these foods is going to allow you to guesstimate and to have a lot more effortless time managing your nutrition, managing your health going forward. However, it takes that trial by fire period in the beginning where you have 6 to 12 months of tracking everything. This is why, you know, obviously I'm biased, but getting a coach can be such a, it's not only do people not, they think about it just from the transformation aspect, which I understand, don't get me wrong. You have a goal weight or something like that. You want to reach that and your coach should help you do that. That's the transformational part of it. But the other part of it is learning these habits and skills so that you don't need that coach forever. Right? Like that's coaching. That's what coaching is. You come to me, you don't understand these certain things. I teach you how to do these certain things while also giving you a transformation. And then you take everything that you learned from me. And then now you're able to fly out of the nest, right? And use these things on your own. It's like, that's the whole point of a really good coach, is so that you don't need that coach anymore. That means I actually taught you something. Whether you do that with a coach or whether you just simply learn how to count calories, how to use a food scale, how to use MyFitnessPal, for example, the app, and just learn these basic nutrition skills, it's like this is something that in the grand scheme of your life isn't going to take up too much of your time, because, you know, what is 6 months within your entire life? Like that would be worth it within that period if that gave you nutritional freedom for the rest of your life, right? So that's something that I think is definitely a big leverage point that more people need to take advantage of. If you have, you know, listened to me for a while, you probably heard me talking about counting calories. Maybe some of you have tried it, but maybe you haven't given it your best shot, or maybe you've done it for like a week or two, and maybe it stresses you out or whatever. But I would say to, you know, it's in the first 2 weeks, it's going to be tedious. It's going to be a little bit of a headache. But then after that, you keep doing it, you get food saved up, you realize that your patterns of eating is somewhat similar on a day-to-day and week-to-week basis, then it becomes much easier. And that is something that you can take with you for a very long time. So that leverage point is counting calories and just learning basic nutrition knowledge. Okay, and the next one, I just have a couple more here. The next one is going to be learning proper lifting technique. So learning proper form whenever you're in the gym. And the reason why I say this one is not just out of pure vanity so that you can make sure that you grow your muscles as big as possible. However, that's definitely a plus as well. But learning, I say learning proper lifting technique for the main thing is honestly going to be injury prevention and probably just like increased life expectancy and not only life expectancy, but life satisfaction and life enjoyment. Because if you can move that, one of the biggest indicators for quality of life whenever you are older is how well you can move. And guess what allows you to move well as you get older, as whatever, your muscle starts to atrophy, as your bones start to get weaker. You can counteract that through lifting. And if you also, not only if you just lift, but if you lift properly, what this is going to do is it's going to teach you the fundamental movement patterns that we do on a regular basis, right? So just like bending down and squatting over to pick up a box, after you've been deadlifting and squatting for a very long time and you've been very meticulous about these lifting techniques, that carries over just naturally into your everyday life. And that is going to be the main goal, right? Because of course, like I said, you know, burning calories, getting bigger muscles, like everything like that, that from the aesthetic standpoint, like sure, that's cool. But learning proper lifting technique from an injury prevention and movement and quality of life perspective is going to be, you know, even way more important. So learning proper lifting technique, making sure that you know how to properly squat, you know how to properly hinge back at your hips and do a deadlift. I have a lot of people that come to me and they talk about how they don't like squats or they don't like deadlifts because it hurts their back or it hurts their knees and it does these certain things. And I'm just like, well, maybe it's not that the movement is bad necessarily, or that like you can't do the movement. It's just that we need to figure out your form. We need to make sure that you're doing this correctly. And so if I have clients send me a form analysis, I'm like, oh, okay. Like it's probably hurting you because whatever, you have too much anterior pelvic tilt whenever you're squatting down. So you're really arching your back really hard and you're pushing back into your hips. Not like you're pushing back into your hips incorrectly, and then it's creating this tightness in the front of your hips, and then it feels like you can't reach depth, so you can't go very low with these squats, and you just feel like you're kind of reaching down to get depth as you squat. And an easy fix with that is learning how to brace properly, learning how to have a neutral spine, learning how to have your spine and pelvis adjusted as you go down in a squat. It's going to make it feel a lot more effortless. Because if you watch like babies and things, and you watch toddlers, you know, I spend a lot of time staring at kids all the time. I'm like, sorry. I was going, hope you guys like humor. You guys know I'm joking. But as I was talking about looking at kids, I was like, you know, I watch kids all the time whenever they squat. Creepy. But if you watch kids, whenever they squat, they have really good form. They have like perfect form, you know, and whenever they bend down to like pick up, I mean, not always, of course, right? But whenever they pick down and get things, like they have very inherent biological movement patterns that are built into us from a younger age. But then as we get older and as we start to lift weights, and of course, it's different whenever it's just body weight versus having a load on your back and your neck and things like that. But or in front of you with a deadlift. But that's the point. You start off slow. You start off with just body weight, learning the movement, and then you continually load that movement, making sure that the movement is being done properly before you add that load. And then you kind of just progress from there. And so this is hard for a lot of people, because maybe you've been squatting and deadlifting just like okay for a very long time, but it doesn't feel really good. But maybe you've built up some strength on these lifts. And so you've been kind of reinforcing this non-optimal movement pattern that over time is probably going to lead to some aches and pains and could potentially lead to injury if you don't get that checked over time, right? So the idea is to figure out how to do it correctly and then just kind of give yourself an ego check whenever you do start doing it correctly, because you might have to move down and load at least temporarily, learn the form. It's going to feel a lot better. You're probably going to get a lot better muscle growth and probably better strength, because you're probably going to have better force production whenever your movement is more optimal, for example. And then over time, you'll likely get even stronger. And now you're getting stronger, you're building more muscle, but you're also keeping yourself safe and you're reinforcing this optimal movement pattern instead of what you were doing. So that's just, yeah, learning proper lifting technique. Yes, of course, for muscles, that's going to be important. But the main thing is making sure you prevent injury as you get older, and then making sure that your quality of life and being able to move around and be flexible as you get older is you know, that's going to be huge. And also with proper lifting technique, because I think sometimes people think it's always interesting whenever, I mean, of course, this is the case with some people who lift weights. And I think whenever people think of people lifting weights and they relate that with stiffness and they talk about, oh, he's just a lifter. He's going to be really stiff. He's not going to be flexible or whatever. Like, I think that they're comparing that to like big time bodybuilders. So people that compete, right? In the Arnold or the Olympia, and these guys who are just massive and they don't have much flexibility and they just can't move really well, right? And that's just, you know, that's for whatever reason. But if you look at, let's say, Olympic weightlifters, for example, people who do snatches and clean and jerks and these really deep squats, and you watch their like ankle mobility, for example, and you watch them have these very, very heavy loads, and you see them and you see how flexible they are, then you realize, oh, okay, it's not necessarily the weights that are making people stiff, it's their shitty movement patterns, right? Because these Olympic lifters take, and you know, their form is religious, right? Like they are very meticulous about their form because it allows them to lift the most weight possible throughout these very difficult and extensive range of motions. But you would never say that they're not flexible whenever you see their, you know, whenever you see their ankle flexion or things like that. You see their knees, their movement patterns. They are actually very, very flexible people because you realize doing a squat, doing a deadlift, all of these things, like all you're doing is basically stretching under load. Like that's what lifting is. But the reason why people end up being not as flexible whenever they lift weights sometimes can be because they don't take the movement throughout a full range of motion. So they're doing partial reps. They're just not, because usually ego gets involved, right? Because whenever you have a shorter range of motion, you're moving the weight through a smaller range of motion, and that's going to make it easier typically to lift more weight. And so if I'm like, hey, no, you need to squat ass to grass as opposed to, you know, those little slight knee bends that you're doing, yeah, sure, you're going to have to maybe bump the weight down by a plate or two or something like that, but it's going to be better for you in the long run. You're probably going to actually you're going to be able to build more muscle, you're going to be safer, and you're going to be more flexible. So it's just, that's one other tangent, I guess, I wanted to go on with the learning proper lifting technique, but that is going to be the other leverage point that is going to be very important. All right, the next one, and I just have, yeah, just a couple more after this one. The next one is going to be persuasion and communicating. I think that this, as far as this being a leverage point, I think it's pretty obvious, but I think even more so in the sense of, with this, I'm thinking of, my mind goes towards likability and being just personable and being able to communicate effectively and clearly while also not being a dick. You know, I think that's kind of the biggest key here. And obviously, you know, persuasion and communicating can be a massive topic, and I'm not going to be able to cover everything here, but I do think it's something that's interesting to learn, especially with like persuasion. So even if you aren't a salesman or something like that, or, you know, maybe you just work for somebody or whatever, you might not think that you need to learn about these persuasion techniques or sales techniques or anything like that. But all it is, honestly, is human psychology. So just understanding how people work and kind of what drives people to do certain things. And so whether you're a parent, whether you're a spouse, you're a friend, whatever it is, right, you're going to have to try to effectively get your point across or try to persuade somebody to do something at some point in your life. And it's just like, learning how to do that and learning how psychology works, especially if you aren't naturally good at this, like with people, like being personable and just kind of having good emotional intelligence. It's like, you need to, let's kind of learn the psychology behind some of these persuasion techniques. So I think one good book on this is, it's actually called Influence by Robert Cialdini. I haven't read all of it, but he gives some good examples in there. And you can even read the Cliff Notes or whatever, but this is a good book on persuasion, on psychology, and just kind of understand like the basics of understanding how to talk to people. But this is a transferable skill that can obviously, you know, it can affect you in many different areas of life. And so if you spend a decent amount of time, nothing too crazy though, but just learning about these basics of whatever it is. It could be cognitive biases, it could be mental frameworks, it could be making better decisions, it could be figuring out how to talk to people, and maybe like motivational interviewing is kind of another one. This is something as a coach that I have to do often, because as you guys know, most of you guys know what you need to do, right? Most of you guys know you need to work out and eat right consistently. That's how you're gonna, if you have fat loss goals, for example, that's how you get there. However, my job as a coach is to make sure that you actually do that consistently. Of course, making sure that you have a plan to follow that will take you there. But I always joke around with people that my job is essentially, it's the art of getting my clients back on track, because life comes up or whatever. Like again, my clients are smart people. They know what they need to be doing on a regular basis. However, they come to me because they rationalize themselves out of these things that even they know are important to them, and maybe they shouldn't do certain things. However, whenever they come to me, not only can I give them like an actual tactical strategy on how to overcome these obstacles, but also it's different whenever they come to me, because not only are they, whenever they self-rationalize to themselves and they don't follow through with something, not only are they letting themselves down, they're also letting me down, right? And so whenever it's just that small little change, even though whenever I say letting me down, I think they're thinking that, of course they're not letting me down. You know, I'm not their dad. They're a grown person. They can do whatever the fuck they want. However, it's just that small amount of friction that can be all that they need so that they actually follow through on these behaviors. And after they start doing that over and over and over again, well then just kind of habits take over and behavior change kind of takes over. But it's like, I need to consistently tell them what to do and then make sure I hold them accountable and figure out ways that I can be like, hey, is this, you know, a meal prep problem? Or is this something like, is there some type of self-sabotage going on with you? Is there some type of, you know, this is the motivational interviewing. Like I have to ask them questions and be like, well, what do you think you're doing wrong? Or like, what do you think that you could do that would change your situation? And so this is actually something whenever I am kind of stumped, maybe on a certain problem with a client, like I can go through this checklist of like, hey, okay, they're doing this, they're doing this, they're doing this. I'm not 100% sure what's going on and what's kind of holding them back from being able to do X, Y, and Z. So then I'll ask them, I'll be like, hey, if I was just to ask you like, hey, what do you think you're doing wrong? Or what do you think that you could be doing differently that might increase your results or might increase your progress or whatever it is? And then oftentimes they have a decent answer, like, oh, you know, it might be because I'm taking these small little bites throughout the day that I'm not really tracking on my food log, and I'm not counting those. And so it's probably just these little bites and these little desserts here and there and these little things in my office, you know, I'm just getting candy here and there. It's probably one of those things. And then I'm like, okay, yes, there we go. And so it's not just me saying, hey, do this. Motivational interviewing is me asking a question so that it allows them to come to a conclusion on their own. And that's part of the critical thinking process. But it's like, I have to know how to do that in the first place and how to ask these certain questions and effectively communicate clearly so that I can get these out of them and then ideally get them back on track, get them closer to their goal. And then next time, whenever they approach this problem, they'll be able to do that on their own without me asking them, right? It's like, that's real growth right there. But I wouldn't know how to do that if I didn't understand these kind of human psychology principles, learning how to persuade people, learning how to communicate effectively. Another very common book on this is going to be How to Win Friends and Influence People. I think there's a lot in that. You can see, like, if you just look at the cliff notes, like if you look at the main table of contents, like you can go and literally just look it on Google right now. There's like 13 of them or something like that, and you see them, you're like, one of them would be like, smile more. And it's just like, yeah, of course that's true. But there's a difference between knowing and doing. And a lot of these things, sure, there's going to be a couple in here in that book that are going to surprise you. Are going to be like, oh, that clicks. But I think what is really magical is in the examples and in the stories within that book, and you're reading through them, and then it just kind of clicks more on not only why like it's a good idea to smile more, but just like it, why that actually comes across as being friendly, or like, or why this in this study, people that smiled more were seen as more more likable. They were able to persuade people. People enjoyed being around them more. People were more likely to buy from them, right? So all of these things. So whenever it comes to relationships or talking to your boss or talking to your coworkers or getting a girlfriend or boyfriend or figuring out relationship problems within your already existing relationship, or maybe with your kids as well, you know, learning how to talk with them effectively is a whole different ballgame. But these things are worth spending time on, so that this little small change in this one area, maybe it's something that you're constantly doing and you read in a book, you're like, hey, stop fucking doing that. And then you stop doing that. And then your entire life can change, right? Because you're now aware of this thing that you keep doing with people. And that was kind of maybe the one thing or a handful of things that was driving people away, or that was making people see you in a certain light. You become aware of it, you change it, and then that can have a big impact on your life. And that is why I think it's a good leverage point to work on. Next one is kind of in alignment with this, with the last one, and that's going to be meditation and understanding your emotions. With meditation, it's just like 10 minutes of meditating every single day, or just again, I don't even meditate for 10 minutes every single day. Usually I would love to, but sometimes, you know, shit happens or whatever. I just don't always do it. However, I still try to do it on an ongoing basis as much as I can, because what I've realized is that whenever I only meditate, or that whenever I meditate only whenever I feel like I need it, by then it's already too late. Right, so I need to do the work whenever things are going well, so that whenever things do start to go downhill a little bit, I'm kind of already three steps ahead, and I'm not trying to play catch up. But meditation can be a very, very small part of your daily life that can have you see the entire world differently. Like being mindful and being more present, it's just like that is your life right now. It's like, think about how many times maybe you've drifted off within this single podcast, and maybe certain things that you've missed, or you're focusing on the road, or you're focusing on something else, right? It's just like there could have been things that you could have learned if you were paying attention to this the entire time, but instead you were doing something else or whatever. Maybe you have to go back and re-listen to certain parts. And then of course, this is just scraping the tip of the iceberg. Being mindful in everyday interactions and being able to actually enjoy what's going on in the moment, as opposed to being stuck in your head and anticipating maybe something from the future, or feeling guilty about something in the past and having regret and thinking about that. It's like the future and the past do not exist. And so all we have is right now. And so being able to understand that through, ideally, meditation being the gateway. And if you have some type of guided meditation, again, I use the Waking Up app by Sam Harris, and I highly recommend it. There's like a 28-day course, I think, that he walks you through it step by step. The first meditation is like 5 minutes, and I don't get anything for this, by the way. He walks you through everything, but you just start to understand that there's kind of two different realities going on, and that's the one that's reality right now, right here, as you're sitting in the present moment, but then also the reality going on inside your head. And what you have to realize is that the one in your head is not real. And that's kind of understanding that and taming that monkey mind in our own head. That can make a drastic difference on your life. Because whenever you, and then I also have understanding emotions here as the second part of this, it's because whenever you realize that all of, and I've said this before, whenever you realize that all of your feelings and emotions are valid, I'm not saying that you shouldn't feel anything or that you should suppress emotions or that they don't matter. All I'm saying is that if you learn how to understand them and then you know that they're valid, but they're not always true, that can have a big impact on how you perceive yourself, how you perceive reality, how you perceive other people's comments towards you or something, or certain life events happening to you, or seeing the scale go up or down and then having these certain emotions from it, right? Whenever you start to understand that these are all just stories and interpretations and this crazy person that lives in the attic of your head, and they're not always telling the truth, even though it can feel very real, right? So it's just like, again, the feelings that you're having, they're valid, and I want you to feel them. However, you don't always have to listen to them, right? It's just like, that's kind of the, and whenever you can do that, whenever you can understand how to do that and kind of snap yourself out of the whatever you want to call it, the cliche, like out of that matrix, out of this constant war going on in your head, and just kind of I heard Sam Harris say it sometimes. He's like, we're just all drowning in self-concern. And that's so true. It's just whenever we're out and about, whenever we're in social situations, just like we can constantly be thinking in our heads like, oh, that was stupid. I shouldn't have said that. Or, I should say this, or I should try this joke. And then, oh fuck, it fell flat. And now I feel stupid. And now that person probably thinks this, and then I'm never going to get a girlfriend. And then this, and then this, and this, you know what I'm saying? It's just like that one little comment can then turn into, oh, now this person thinks I'm stupid. Oh, the whole group is going to laugh at me. Oh, they're going to be thinking about this next time they see me. And then I'm never, that can spiral down into, oh, I'm never going to find love in my entire life, right? So whenever you can understand that and detach yourself from that situation and just kind of see it from a bird's eye view and see your emotions happening in your head, and then also realizing, hey, this has been going on for my entire life, and I've been sad that one time. I've been angry that one time. I've been scared that one time. I've had fear that one time. It's just like, you realize it comes and goes. It just comes and goes. And this happens over and over and over and over again. And so whenever you can drop back and realize that these emotions are coming and going, and they don't have to have as much power as we think they do, right? I think it was, who was it? Was it Seneca, Marcus Aurelius, one of those old philosophers that are really smart? But they said we are often more frightened than hurt. We tend to suffer more in imagination than in reality. It's like, how many times have you had a situation where you've gone through this doomsday scenario in your head before it ever happened? Let's say you're going on a date with somebody and you're thinking, oh, this is going to go bad, this is going to go bad, this is going to go bad. And then you have the date and then it tends to go really well, right? It's like you just went through all of these things in your imagination, and you're suffering for no reason. And then of course that's just one situation. And then if you're actually suffering, we can tend to make our suffering even worse by making ourselves feel guilty, right? Or saying that we are unworthy, or saying that we're never going to figure something out, or saying we're lazy. It's just like, whenever you can take a step back, and again, I'm not saying that this is easy, but I'm saying that meditation and learning about these things and understanding them and how they come and go, that can be a leverage point that you can work on for a certain period of your life. And that can change your entire view on reality. Like literally, it can change your entire view on reality. And so I think that is something that is definitely worth spending some time on. Okay. And the last two, these, I'll run through these pretty quick. They're pretty straightforward. But the second to last one is going to be cooking. Cooking, and this one, I feel like this one's also another obvious one that I don't need to spend too much time on. You guys know that it's just like, the more that you cook, I'm pretty sure in the research, it's pretty clear that the more times you cook at home throughout the entire week, it's going to lead to healthier outcomes. You're going to have less fat. You're going to have better biomarkers. You're going to have more muscle. You're going to probably save a lot more money. It's a very valuable skill to learn that I think, again, you don't have to be a three-star Michelin chef or anything like that. However, I think learning how to cook a week's worth of meals of different varieties and things, I think that's going to pay off huge in the long term, again, around your health and fitness. And then also whenever it comes to money. And then I think also just like, it's really cool to know how to cook for somebody else. If you have guests come over or something, like, yeah, I'm going to whip up this, this, and this, right? And just knowing how to do that and how to prepare that, it's like, that's one of the most primal human being type things that you could ever learn, right? It's just like knowing how to cook for somebody else and make a meal and share meals together and break bread together. It's like that gets biblical. That goes all the way back to Jesus at the table. And that, you know what I'm saying? It's just like, and whatever you believe, it's just like going back towards the beginning of time, cavemen. It's just like our community or our world was able to advance because we learned how to cook and share food. The book Sapiens, I'm pretty sure, talks about like whenever we learned how to cook, our brains developed bigger because we were able to absorb more nutrients. We were able to eat more foods, more varieties of foods. And so what I'm getting at here is just like, it's a very valuable and it's just a very primal and human skill to know how to do that can not take tons of time learning how to do, but then you can use that skill for the rest of your life in a positive manner. All right. And the very last one, we'll wrap this up, is going to be self-defense. This is actually one that I would like to spend more time out of all of these. I feel like I've done a lot of these, but self-defense is one that I haven't spent as much time on yet, but I would like to explore that more in the future. Because obviously, yeah, as far as the why this would be a leverage point and why this would be something valuable to learn that could change your life is like you could save your life, quite literally. So learning the basics of self-defense, whether that is, you know, jujitsu or whatever it is, there's so many different things out there that you can practice, but feeling comfortable in those types of situations and knowing when to fight and when not to fight and when to do certain things or when to say certain things or whatever that is, it's like quite literally that could save your life one day. And so I think that, this is going to be one that if you haven't learned how to do this, at least the bare minimum, and I'm talking to myself here. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like I think I can handle myself in quite a few different situations. I've played football. I've had like scraps and things with friends, but and I'm a bigger guy. I lift weights. But that being said, if I come across somebody who's, you know, even 50 pounds smaller than me, but they have their blue belt in jiu-jitsu, it's like they're gonna whoop my ass whenever it comes to like male or female. It's just like they know basic jiu-jitsu and I don't have any training whatsoever. It's like, yeah, they're gonna do mostly what they want with me unless I get, you know, a good punch in or something like that. But self-defense is going to be one of those things that I think we can all agree that maybe we should spend even just a little bit of time on this, learn some of the basics, and that could definitely have a positive net outcome for you in the grand scheme of things. All right. So leverage points. Yeah, I really like this topic and I think it's really interesting to think about. I'd love to hear your all's responses too. Like if you listen to this and maybe you have a comment on maybe one of these or maybe there's something else that you thought of, send me a DM, whatever. Just send me a message. I would love to hear about it because I think that this is a very interesting topic. So to run through them again real quick, sleep, so buying a comfortable mattress. The next one's going to be money management and automating your finances and savings. The third one is going to be counting calories and just basic nutritional knowledge. The fourth one is going to be learning proper lifting technique for injury prevention and quality of life over time. The fifth one is persuasion and communicating. The sixth one is going to be meditation and understanding your emotions. Seventh one is cooking. And then the eighth one is self-defense. All right, guys, that is it for this solo episode. If you guys like the podcast, please do me a favor, rate, review, subscribe. I know I'm going to say that every single time, but it really does. It helps. It helps a ton. Helps us grow this, helps get the word out there, helps other people hop on board with what we're doing, and we can share ideas and we can all get better together. It's a win-win for everybody, guys, and I'm fucking all about win-wins for everybody. So thank you for listening. And I will, yeah, so thank you as always for listening. And I don't have the video for this, but yeah, thank you for listening. I'll talk to you guys soon. And that is that, my friends. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the More Than Fitness podcast. And please, if you could help me out a little bit here and leave a rate and review in iTunes, and also take a screenshot and post it up on your IG story. Tag me at MattMcLeod6. I'd love to share it. I'd love to connect with you. I'd love to hear your feedback about the podcast, and also so that we can share the word with other people. I would love to build up this community, build up this tribe of people that we have like you and I, and get the word out there. Also, if you want more free content, you can check the links in the description. I have my free 4-week workout plan, The Ultimate Physique Development. And also, if you want to work with me online, one-on-one for personal coaching, you can check the link in the description as well. And anything else you need, please send me an email, send me a DM. I would love to hear from you. Again, thank you so much for listening.